WGN High atop Chicago Skyline Studio. It is Dane here with you until 10 in studio. The incomparable, the inimitable Jim Bob Morris here. Of course, you know him as the fearless leader of El Bandito Yankee Nation, right? Then we've got Dan Niss here. We've got a Perv Shah. We've got NHL Hall of Famer, beloved Blackhawk Chris Chelios. And Chris, I was at the game last night, and I got to tell you, for a team that's almost in last place, the energy is there. Even without Connor Bedard, the energy was there. The fans are excited. I think they feel like, you know, good things are on the horizon. Connor Bedard, we just got the reports, just had, you know, surgery on his jaw. As a kid that's so young, that hasn't had injuries, talk a little bit about that. I mean, does that change, like, your psyche at all, or is he just a hockey player? He'll just be fine.
He's just a hockey player, and the good thing is it's bone. Better than ligaments, you know, better than a shoulder or knee. So, you know, once he's healed, they say it's even stronger. It calcifies, and so he's going to be fine. And hopefully he'll make that All-Star game and at least be a part of it, and, you know, be able to, you know, participate in maybe some of the skills competitions. And it'd be a shame for him to miss his first All-Star game, being voted the youngest kid. But he's sure a heck of a kid, and he's had a great start.
The 6 to 8 weeks, they said that he could be out. There's been fans that have talked, well, you know, it isn't, like you said, it's not his legs or his arms or anything. Couldn't they just put some sort of plastic bubble over it?
No. They still got to wait to 6 weeks for sure for the bone to heal. That is what it is. You know, nobody's bones heal quicker. And I'm sure he'll probably be wearing that type of cage he did in junior as opposed to a shield to protect it a little bit more for the rest of the year. And it's not like it's a big deal. He's worn it his whole, you know, career as a kid, so it won't be a big deal.
When it comes to the season so far, you hate for him to miss things, right? Because it seems like there's a new stat coming out all the time. He's doing this, he's doing that. You know, the first round draft picks, the first pick of the draft, there have been some great ones. You know, he comes out, I think everybody agrees, as advertised. But your thoughts, Chris, as a guy who has seen it all, is he better than maybe they thought he was? I mean, we're seeing stuff that looks even more special than maybe we had thought.
I mean, only time will tell you. I mean, you look at the team, quite honestly, and with all the injuries, the guys they brought in, Taylor Hall, you know, Foligno just got hurt, Anathisu, he's been out for a while. You know, not no disrespect to the other players, but you need someone to surround him with some quality players. And these guys, that, like you mentioned, Edmonton was a great game last night. They competed, but a kid like Donato is a perfect example. He's not a finisher. He had plenty of opportunities. The kid Joey Anderson had some, you know, point blank chances. He just couldn't score and couldn't find the back of the net last night. We've got those young picks coming up, right? And a lot of guys, a lot of promise, and we're going to get, you know, some more high picks. But you can't do it by yourself, and he's and no one did it by themselves. Gretzky, Lemieux, they all had, you know, guys like Pippen and Jordan. So they need to surround him with some more talent, and it's coming.
You mentioned those guys, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of that, you know, that time period. It was like a little kid, but, you know, when Michael Jordan came in, the team was bad, but he was just such an exceptional player. Yeah. It still draws. So you're seeing sort of the power of that one personality to be able to bring it. I know when they picked him, I think the Blackhawks sold, one of our guys here said, $7 million in season tickets just based on that. So win or lose, people are coming out.
No, again, and all you get asked for is, he's a star player. It's somewhat like when Denny Savard came in with the Blackhawks, and they weren't that competitive at that time. I think they call it the Snores Division, but everybody came to see, you know, Denny Savard. He was unbelievable. So, and we're seeing the same thing. There's hope. You know, you got the number one pick, and the fans are excited, and there's a buzz. I go to every home game, and it's been exciting. And the Blackhawks have done a great job of making it fan-friendly, you know, kid-friendly, and it's exciting.
It is, and you've been, of course, around to all the different you know, stadiums and arenas around the country. The Blackhawks just are really doing a great job. For those people who have not made their way down to the UC, it is a fun time, whether it's the way, Chris, as you mentioned, where they engage the kids, you got the Zamboni, you've got all this stuff that happens between periods, the pregame stuff, just the presentation that they do is just outstanding. I don't think every team is doing that.
No, but they took a page, or tore a page out of Las Vegas. We're in the entertainment business, right? And that's what, at the end of the day, you know, if you're not winning and you're struggling as a team, the next thing you have to do is entertain the fans and get them involved, and that's what the Blackhawks, they're just changing with the times. They've got all new staff, you know, from top to bottom, and they get it. And it's a new generation. I'm stuck in the old generation. I don't get it. I don't like the corny stuff or the but it works. Like, I'm just totally being honest as a dad, but if I talk to my kids, they love it. So, you know,
Chris mentions
I'm open.
Corny people did cheer, but they did have the Hispanic
good now.
Elvis impersonator did like.
Yeah, I love it. There's been all kinds of great stuff.
You talk about hope, though, right? We're going to transition to football, the Green Bay Packers. You talked about two teams, whether it's Bears, Packers, started out.
Whoa. Who said hope for the Packers?
I'm just saying.
Hold on. The Packers are thinking about playoffs. The Bears fans are thinking about the draft.
Well, I mean, you got to think, as the season started, both teams were probably starting from basically the same square. You know, young teams, unproven, young quarterbacks, probably Justin Fields, more proven than Jordan Love. And at the end of the season, you have a team with hope, and then you have one still kind of spinning around with hope, right? I think headed in the right direction. We're just not sure what that direction
is. Chris
is
a diehard Chicago Bears fan.
As he should be.
No, and he is. He's a diehard. He's loyal to the fault.
No, I'm going to cheer for the Pack against Dallas, though, because everybody hates Dallas, I think, right? Everybody loves to see them fall flat in their face.
Yeah, they do.
I'll be cheering for the Pack this weekend.
Yeah, they absolutely do. But the game, so Dane, you know, attended the one of the largest tailgates that we've ever been to. I mean, I said this. You know, we went through literally 600 bottles of tequila at that tailgate. And so I go, wow, that's a lot of tequila.
Yeah.
When you start thinking about 27 shots a bottle, I mean, that's a lot, bro.
It was a festive bunch for sure. You had fan bases, both of them. We talked to Tim Chanley a little earlier in the show. So you had the Chicago Bears Tailgate Club. Chris is very familiar with the great tailgate that they do. All those people came up there. They were part of it. And then you had the Green Bay fans as well. I was happy to see, you know, it wasn't like the old days, you know, the old Red Wing Blackhawk days where you didn't want to wear like a Red Wing jersey at a Blackhawk.
You know, we had people dancing on the little frozen tundra dance floor we had there at the deal. We would have a Bears fan come out and he'd do a little jig or she'd do a little jig, and then we'd have a Packer and then they start dancing together. Wasn't it festive and they all got along? I can tell you, I've been to hockey games when I watched Chris, and I mean, if I wore something that wasn't right, you get beat up.
Yes.
And if you go up in the old Soldier Field days, if you wore a Green Bay Packer anything, you might have had a hard time getting to your car.
If you're Santa, and you're, you know, if you were at Veterans Stadiums in Philadelphia, you were also in danger. So
Yes. Let's
talk a little bit about this. Are the Packers, have they gotten to the point, and that game is going to be right here on WGN Radio as we program. So there'll be El Bandito commercials for that game, Packers versus Cowboys. It's one of the most anticipated ones. Jim Bob, I know that, you know, you've talked throughout the entire year on the Jim Bob Show is that Dallas, especially at home, a dangerous team and a dangerous place until the playoffs. Does that collapse? Does it start this weekend?
No. Here's the deal. Dallas, I think their kryptonite is anytime they go on the road. If they go on the road, it's like, whoa, they're like hypnotized or something. At home, they take on this superhuman. They beat the crap out of Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, like manhandled them and beat them up physically. And they were fast. And I think when you get on that turf down there, and they just materialize into a whole different team. On the road, they actually played well last week against the Commanders. But I think the Packers are going to have a tough time going into Dallas this weekend. Just 7.5 points, I kind of like taking, you know, the Pack, but I don't know if they can pull that off. It's going to be close enough, something could happen. And guess what? Here we are in a one-game scenario. You get an injury, and, you know, somebody gets hurt, and it changes the whole program of the game.
People have brought up to me, you looked at the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, went up to Lambeau, Packers beat them. I mean, it could happen. Anything could happen. It's a team on the rise. We'll see. Well, you think about the Packers, think about packaging, right? You want to package up a sustainable world, a sustainable Earth.
No, they're getting ready to package a trip, possibly package a trip to the Super Bowl.
That's what
but
you
when
want.
We're talking about packaging, we've got the world's experts with us tonight.
And we're going to talk with them in a minute. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with all of that. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Skyline Studio overlooking, just the people listening, they don't know what it is that we're looking at. It's you've got Navy Pier there, you've got the river right here. We've got a planet that's beautiful, Jim Bob, and you want to save it, you want to preserve it, you want to sustain it, right? And so in studio with us, you brought that sustainability, not only on the great and undefeated flavor of El Bandito Yankee, but also on the packaging side. We talked to Packers, it all starts there. Dan Niss, we've got a Perv Shot. Guys, welcome to WGN.
Hi, Dan Niss, president of Charter Next Generation, the largest sustainable packaging company in North America, if not the world. And here's a Purvis Shaw, our VP of sustainability.
Hey guys,
that's a lot of pressure.
It is.
You know, you got global perseverance.
Yeah, you're the world. You're the United States' largest, and we're going to talk about sustainability. And you need to tell us all about what we should do, how we should do it. You're on live right now.
First, how do you approach it? Because obviously, packaging is necessary, right? But people want, you know, to be able to have it last as long as it's supposed to last, right? It has to be, you know, strong and, you know, serve its purposes, right? How do you approach it?
Yeah, I mean, I can make it as complicated as you want, but for our audience tonight, it really boils down to the packaging has a very critical role from getting the product from where it's manufactured to the shelf and to your home. And the goal is to really get it into the recycle bin so that we can reprocess it and reuse that materials again and make it recyclable rather than the trash. And so our company and Jim Bob and the team, we're focusing on getting packaging to be recyclable. And today it's not. 98% of the flexible packaging you see out there when you go into a Walmart, Jewel Osco, Costco, it's not recyclable. It's not friendly for the recycling stream.
So all of that is ending up either on a barge somewhere, in a landfill somewhere, all of it?
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of it is being either landfilled or incinerated. And so our goal is ultra focused on getting it into that blue bin, getting it reprocessed, and for companies like us to reuse that recycled plastic back into the packaging.
I think it's important to be able to get the word out, let people know about that, because before, way back in the day, you know, so I don't know who had said it, maybe they said the kids really initiated a lot of the recycling efforts because they learned about it and then they bugged their parents to go ahead and do it. So, you know, as you're sharing some of the things that are out there, a lot of this stuff people... And it's all part of it, right? You don't want people to have to focus on necessarily the packages, but to know exactly what happens with it and be a part of that solution is important.
Talk about closed loop stuff in regards to how, like, big box stores can assist the general public in the collections and the recyclability and things of that nature. I think the general public would like to know, hey, how can we participate, you know, effectively?
Yeah, Jim Bob, you're exactly right. There's a bin right outside of pretty much every grocery store that we walk by, and that bin can take your grocery bags, take a lot of your recyclable packaging today, and it gets sent to recyclers. So companies like us are actually working with those companies to reprocess that material and reuse it. That's the goal. And so we walk by it every day, and we don't probably pay too much attention to it. And so we're here today to say, hey, take a look at your packaging, flip it around, look at the symbol. And I will bet you a lot of the packaging you're throwing in the garbage today can actually go into that bin so we can reuse it and recycle it.
So, Dan, for you guys, is there like a laboratory where you guys are coming up with some of these solutions or working on this? You know, how much of the time spent? Because it's a business, right? You've got products. You want to sell products. But this is a big part of it.
Yeah. So we invest a lot of money in PCR and recycling. So you have pre-consumer, you have post-consumer, you have advanced recycling technologies, and our job is to try to get as many products in the big box stores to being recyclable. So when you look, like a purpose said, when you look at the back of that package and you see that X through it, that means it's not recyclable. Our job is to get rid of that X so it is recyclable, from pet food to, I mean, I can go on and on, but that's our mission, is to make more and more plastic recyclable so it's not really a single use. The problem with single use and the negative people have on it is because the people throw it away because they don't understand. And that's the negative. But plastic is not going away. It's going to probably grow. If GDP grows 2.5% in 2024, flexible packaging will probably grow 5-7%. Because it does extend the shelf life of whether it's produce, whether it's protein, et cetera. And so our job is just to bring the technology and then give the consumer, the end consumer, the opportunity to recycle it, so it's not end of life.
We've had congressional hearings where people have showed up from California, Washington, Oregon, New York, and they've demanded the end of plastic packaging. How do you respond to that?
Who's going to pay for it? That would be my response.
Well, no. Well, here's the deal. It's the same deal as getting rid of your gas stove, or everybody's got to drive an electric car, even though you can't charge it because we've got a grid out. And so how do we respond to some of this just absurd thought process in the fact that the most sustainable packaging out there is plastic packaging, yet they want to make they want to get on and they want to think they're doing their civic duty to try to eliminate it, which is absolutely 180 degrees wrong. What's your defense of, hey, here's the real story?
Yeah, you've got to bring science to the conversation. You got to bring facts. And so the example I would talk about tonight is, you know, we're a family of four. We buy a lot of stuff from Costco. And if you walk around the Costco...
That outlets, is not a paid advertisement, by the way. That just came naturally.
You were starting
shout out to Costco.
A real transition from rigid plastic containers, let's say your laundry pods, to a flexible pouch that uses somewhere between 30 and 40% less plastic than your rigid tub. And so our story to those, you know, those politicians is bring science to the conversation, bring facts. And when you really compare a lot of the conventional ways of using plastic to the new ways of using plastic in the flexible packaging arena, you're actually using a ton of less plastics and doing the same exact job that the consumers need, which is protect the product and get it to the get it to the house.
It's all about education. We're doing a little bit of that right here on WGN Radio. Of course, you can educate the politicians, the legislators. We're late for the news. We're going to take a quick break, and we come back. You think about Costco. Some people, Jim Bob, that's where they eat. They eat there because they have a great sampling program, right?
I eat there on sampling day. What are you talking about? Saturdays are great.
Yeah, but here, coming up, Restaurant Week, Chicago Restaurant. When we come back, we are going to have Blake Stubbs. He is going to be calling in from the obvious and recognized entertainment capital of America, Peoria, Illinois. So he'll be calling in, but we're also going to share our favorite restaurants here as we ease into Restaurant Week. So keep it here. It's Dane on 720 WGN. It is Dane here with you, high atop Chicago until 10. And on the line with us, we have from the well-known, the undeniable entertainment capital of Peoria, Illinois, we have Blake Stubbs. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, which, of course, the top tourist attraction is Big Al's. Blake, welcome to WGN.
Well, thank you, Dane. It's a pleasure. It's been a minute for you and I, and I'm glad we got this chance to talk.
It has been a minute, but when I think entertainment, when I think superstars, I think movies, I think Peoria, Illinois. And in studio, we have Jim Bob Morris, who, of course, lives not too far from Peoria, right? He's in Bloomington, and so he's well familiar with the amazing entertainment scene there in Peoria.
No, don't accuse me of being at Big Al's all the time, okay? I'm not doing that, Dane.
No,
we're not going there.
That isn't what I meant. But we are also talking about Chicago Restaurant Week. And so as big a fan of movies as you are, Blake, you are also a big food fan. So we're going to go around the room. So in studio, just so you know, Blake, we've got Jim Bob Morris. We've got Bill Ness. We've got
Dan Ness, actually, but he may be like Bill. I don't know, Bill.
We got Dan Ness. Okay? We've got a perv shot. We've got NHL Hall of Famer Chris Chelios. So they'll all share those. So Blake, you go first.
Oh boy, if I'm thinking Chicago all-time favorite restaurants, let me think. I got to go. Gibson's is a big one. I'm a big Gibson's guy.
Yeah,
we were there tonight. We like
Gibson's. We were there earlier. We were there at the cut. We got. Hey, that was a good call. Good one right off the bat. How about, I got to ask you, what's your favorite place over in Peoria? Because I come over there all the time, and I like, you know, I go to Sully's, I like Sullivan's, I go to Connected, I go to Dime, I go to, you know, I hit them all. I go to Jim's. What's your favorite place over there?
It's a place very near and dear to my heart. I've been going there since I was a child, actually, with my grandparents. It's called Agatucci's. They're very well known for their pizzas here in Peoria. I have to admit, guys, I was the pickiest eater as a kid. So if any place had fried chicken, Blake would eat. That was the way it worked. They have delicious fried chicken, but it's not like the thing that they really hype up. But I will say their pizza, it's like a mainstay around Peoria. So Agatucci's is a place. And when you go in, you feel like you're walking into Jimmy's Bar in Goodfellas. Like, it's got an old-style look to it. There's wood paneling on the walls. Like, they got a few TVs and everything, but it's got a really old, like, 1960s, 1970s era feel to it. And Peoria used to have a couple places like that, but it's kind of the last one standing, for me at least.
Well, you know,
so I'd go with Agatucci.
We've got the Hall of Famer. He's not only a Hall of Fame hockey player, but he's a Hall of Fame eater. I've seen it.
Yes,
okay.
He loves his
restaurants.
And his family restaurateurs.
Yeah, he knows his stuff. So we got Chris Chilios on us with us as well. And so I think we got to get Chris as like top five. Chris, we go to.
All right. Well, before restaurant, who's the most famous person from Peoria, Illinois, in your mind?
Richard Pryor.
There you go. That was God. I thought I had you. Okay.
The one true legend.
Yeah,
true, baby. That's a good one.
Okay, restaurants. All right. If we just go right down the line, and what type of food, whether it's Italian, sushi, steak, seafood, I'm going to go with Chicago Cut. Our good friends over there, David Flom, and Gibson's. My top two favorite. Over the years I've been in Chicago, Italians got to be Valare over on Illinois Street. Unbelievable. Benny's been doing it for 50 years there, and nobody does it better than Benny. Seafood, I got to give the nod to RPM Seafood over on the river. Beautiful place. Melman's, all their restaurants are quality plus spots. And by the way, they do all carry El Bandito tequila, in case you're wondering.
We're not biased.
Yeah. Nobu. Obviously, Nobu, known throughout the country. Most beautiful one is out in Malibu, California. But the Nobu here, second to none when it comes to sushi. Great staff. What else are we missing here?
Greek.
Greek Islands Cafe. It was Diana's. My godfather, Petros, used to run Diana's, and we spent a lot of years there. That was Jim Belushi, Dan Aykroyd's spot over on Halstead. Still love Greek Town. Right now, I got to give the nod to Greek Islands Cafe.
When it comes to steak, a city known for its steakhouses, you said Chicago Cut. Chris, what is it that they do for the listeners that they do that you just don't find in some of the other places?
I mean, eventually that grill gets the flavor. Whether it's a burger joint, some of the best burger joints, that grill develops its flavor. And, you know, whether they move or whatever, they take that grill with them. And it's just that whatever the spices, whatever their recipes are, once that's in the grill, you know, they don't miss a beat. And I should mention Gene Giorgetti's also, yeah. Quality, old school. A lot of Greek buddies and Italian buddies over there. But I think that's all it is. You know, it's just once they get that flavor in that meat, it's you know, it's to die for.
Jim Bob, when you come to Chicago, where do you go?
Well, usually I show up wherever you're at, WGN studio, because I got a job, I got to work. But no, I'm with Chris. I mean, I like the places he's named and so forth, but I'm kind of interested in this whole movie deal. I'm going to kind of segue over back to there in a second. Okay, I want to hear about this.
But let's get Dan and Purves, like, your thoughts. Guys, it's restaurant week. Not that you have to feel compelled, but it's on the subject list. What do you like?
I like thin crust pizza. which one is the best?
Like Red Baron?
No, like Butch's.
Which
Pat's Pizza, South Loop.
Pat's Pizza.
Just a sleeper, but so good.
Yeah. Yes. All right. And it's important you guys mention that too, is because as we travel, we all travel, I'm sure, you know, people always say deep dish pizza. That's what they say, hot dogs and deep dish pizza. But the, you know, the pub style pizzas.
Dane, I don't want to hold anybody hostage, but if they want to get to me this week, we can do the show next week and I can tell you. And if they're carrying El Bandito, my very favorite deep dish pizza.
So, Burb, what's your thoughts?
You know, I live in Roscoe Village, and so my heart goes to the restaurants that you really cater to, you know, families. And so I've got to give a shout out to a couple restaurants there, because they really take care of you from the minute you come in with a stroller and little kids and, you know, French fries on the menu. And so I've got to give a shout out to Amor and Tequila, great Mexican restaurant, future home of El Bandito Tequila.
Okay. All right.
I liked it.
Number two, Turquoise Cafe, Turkish restaurant, really great romantic vibe, you know, but also curtail, you know, and cater to the family audience.
Well, that's why there's more kids, because it's got that romantic vibe.
Exactly.
And then it's a Barry Weiss playing on when you go in there. And next thing you know, you have some Turkish food and a kid. So 9 months later.
You mentioned romantic vibe. It makes me think Al's in Peoria. We got Blockbuster Blake. So, Blake, when you're in Chicago.
What a segue.
Just kidding. When you travel here, and you're here often, Blake, you love Chicago. You love food. What are your favorite places here?
Oh, let me think. You know what? I've made frequent stops to just about every hot dog place I can stop into. I love watching people get kicked out of them. That's also my favorite thing.
You're a late night guy. So you're basically saying you're looking at about 1:30. You're doing Wiener Circle, but you're a 1:30 guy, okay?
I'm a frequenter of the United Center, so you'll see me at the Billy Goat quite often there on Madison. I usually stop in at WGN, so I always take recommendations and kind of check out places as I can. But I will tell you this. I really want to hit up the place that the bear is based on. Now, I know that that's become a real tourist attraction and everything, but I feel like in principle, as a man who fancies himself a person with high taste, a high level of taste with pop culture, I got to go where the good food is too, right? So that's one of those things I want to track down here in the near future. And I know vaguely where it is, but again, I'm still a tourist, I guess, in Chicago. I get lost easily, but thankfully, we carry a GPS in our pocket everywhere we go, so I'm able to find my way one way or another. But yeah, you'll easily find me at the Billy Goat, though.
Nice.
In the next segment, we're going to go deep into some of these movies. But before we take that break, Blake, your thoughts? We've got Chris Chelios here, Jim Bob Morris, former NFL player. What's your best hockey movie, best football movie? Do you have one or two?
Best hockey movie, I'm going to easily go with Slapshot. That's my personal all-time favorite.
Agreed.
As far as football movies go, that's a little tough.
North Dallas 40, Nick Nolte.
The All-American's a good one about the kid in Arkansas. I like that one.
Yeah, hey, Blake. I can tell you the best movie is The Graduate.
The Graduate. That's a perfect film, in my book, at least. Well, I'm one of the guys
plastics
that
is where it's at.
we've digressed, Dave. Right. Please relax.
Right.
We've digressed.
All right, so Blake, collect your thoughts and come back and give your thoughts on some of those current movies that are out there, or any else other things you want to share on the movie side, and we'll tackle that when we come back from this break. It's Dane here, 720 WGN. WGN on the line, continuing our conversation with Blockbuster Blake Stubbs from the entertainment capital of Illinois, which of course is Peoria, and in studio, the incomparable Jim Bob Morris, the leader of El Bandito Yankee Morris Packaging, a diverse business leader, former professional athlete, all of those things. And we've got Dan Nis, we've got him here. Apurv Shah is getting us some cups because I guess there's going to be an El Bandito Yankee sampling, and a man behind a lot of that too here is NHL Hall of Famer and beloved Blackhawk, soon to have his jersey retired.
He is, and let me Chris tell you Chelios. Something. One of the questions I've been dying to ask him, how heavy is the Stanley Cup? Because it looks like it's, what do you think it weighs?
Okay, I know this. It's either 26 pounds or 36 pounds. How's that? I'm going to use this Hey Siri, you guys, don't mind. Hey Siri, how much does the Stanley Cup weigh?
So, Blake, what's going on? I know you have a couple movies you want to share. Is this the time of year where movies are... So I know the award shows are kind of heating up. We had Joe Coy kind of fall a little bit flat on the Golden Globes. He was no Ricky Gervais, that's for sure.
Very much so. Unfortunately for Joe Coy, apparently his audience was not feeling it last night or the other night. So I will say that we are full swing award season. The Golden Globes have happened. The Oscar voting will conclude in, I believe, 6 days from today. And then you're gonna get your nominations soon thereafter. So that's going to lead to a whole bunch of theatrical re-releases, because a lot of the films that get released will get put out, so that you're going to be able to see a lot of things right now. And then, of course, they're going to have what's the phrase I'm looking for here? There'll be many re-releases, and some of those things will be going on even like right now, so that voting can happen. Because members of the Academy don't just live like in Los Angeles; they live all over the place. And some of the bigger films this year that are looking to go in with a big head of steam for the Oscars, at least, are things like Oppenheimer. The Holdovers had a good showing with Paul Giamatti winning the Golden Globe the other night. I personally, recently, it's not in the big Oscar conversation, but I'm a big fan of Michael Mann's Ferrari, which just released and is still playing in theaters.
I saw it last week. I saw it last week. It was really good. I did enjoy that, and I thought that he played it pretty good. I thought that the actor who played Ferrari was really good. If you've not seen it, it's a great movie.
Yeah, Adam Driver really dialed it in for Enzo Ferrari, and the Penelope Cruz, who plays his wife in the film, is just she's outstanding.
Hard to make her look plain, you know, because she's so beautiful. I mean, but I mean, they did a great. I've seen a lot of us. You know, Oppenheimer's a good one. It's a good one. I didn't see some of the ones that were up. Like, I didn't have any desire to see Chicken for Linda for whatever reason. I mean, you know, I mean, I didn't have any desire to look at it. I didn't even sound, you know, I mean, The Monk with a Gun, which I want to watch. I mean, because I want to see that. I mean, or Preacher with a Gun. That would be another one.
But part of the nominations allow for some of these movies that didn't have an audience or maybe don't have that awareness is like, that's what people, Jim Bob knows about these because, you know, they're up for Oscars. The show itself is, and we talked a little bit about Joe Coy, who's your favorite Oscar host? Jim Bob, your thoughts too. Everybody kind of give your thoughts. Like, who's good? It's a tough job.
I like Ricky. Ricky, I thought, was the best because here's the deal. He gave it to all of them. He goes like this, because you think you're so cool. And I mean, I say this all the time. I've been around famous people, and I compliment Chris all the time. He's one of the iconic stars of hockey, one of the best ever. And I see how he handles it. And I see other guys who are, whether they're acting or whatever, how they handle it, and I'm embarrassed for them. And it really is. I think Ricky, I love him. He was the best.
The Golden Globes lends itself to, you know, just a little more, you know, kind of edginess, right? But like Billy Crystal for the Oscars.
He was great.
He's always good.
He was great. Who's the next Billy Crystal?
Billy Crystal's probably my all-time favorite. I will say this though: the Golden Globes is like going to a drunken dinner party.
How about this? Could you see Chappelle doing the Oscars? How bad would that be?
I bet they asked him and he didn't do it. You know.
Well, Chris Rock's not doing it anymore.
it's kind of a weird job to take these days because if you really want to go out there and do it, like, you know, Gervais does with, say, the Golden Globes and everything. You're really going to have to play to a very specific set of rules because it's a big network 3-hour gig.
Well, let me ask you this question: Who wants to do a show and potentially get assaulted, and the guy who assaults me sits down and like nothing happened, and then wins an Oscar and gives a corny speech? I mean, really, if you think about it, it's a very risky business.
Jim Bob brings up a good point. So the Oscars with the whole Will Smith slap, it brought a lot of attention to it, but did it really damage the event, the broadcast, the show for long term?
Not really. I believe the governors of the Academy gave Smith a 10-year ban from attending the Oscars and even being qualified to be considered, regardless of what role he takes or what performance he gives. So, I mean, you know, the quote-unquote punishment has been levied, but I do think that this year it's probably going to be a much more controlled broadcast, which means
boring.
Less slapping.
Don't we all kind of sit on the same page here? If they cut an hour off the thing and made it 2 hours, you know, and just kind of flew through awards, it'd be a lot better for everybody. The problem is that they've also cut certain awards from the broadcast in the past, like cinematography, which I don't know if you guys know this, but it's really hard to make movies without cameras. So the big thing is that once they reintegrate those things in, they still maintain the long length. The boredom factor keys into it.
But don't you think the politics have added to the boredom factor? The politics that everyone gets up and gives a speech for 6 minutes, and we talk about the division of the country and their politics and their political view. Don't you think that's also caused a little bit of people to go, this sucks?
I think there is a bit of a hangover for that. I will agree. I don't typically mind because it's usually when I get up and go to the bathroom. The whole thing, because see, I go to the same party every year, and every year there's a whole contest about, you know, who's gonna, within the party at least, about, you know, who's gonna guess the best ballot, so you take home a prize, and you know, it's just a fun evening to kind of sit back and look at the movies, but. That has sort of fallen off. The love of the movies has sort of fallen off, and it started to evolve into something else. if they can somehow bring it back to just being about the movies, I feel like they would be in a better situation. Was it Kevin Costner who came out?
Terrible.
A couple years ago and like gave a very straightforward, like, we're here because we love cinema. We're here because, you know, the movies bring people together. They do all these things. I'm like, everything he just said, whatever he just said, that's what this 3 hours needs to be.
Yeah, instead of maybe the soapbox style. But so your thoughts, yeah. They added an extra category for the Golden Globes, which was, I think, most successful movie or something. It was Barbie, right? Yeah. And this is the kind of movie that typically, especially with the Oscars, you know, big comedies, big blockbusters, they never get consideration. Do you think that would make it maybe more interesting if they take the movie everybody loved and build it
in? Step Brothers. I mean,
hey.
Step Brothers.
I will say this, as the guy whose name is Blockbuster Blake Stubb, this might sound crazy, but I am not really in favor of the Oscars adding a category that rewards the movie that made the most money. I feel like it's just an easy metric. Everybody knows who wins it every year. I'm happy the movie made all that money, but I don't see how that benefits what the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences is about. I think it's just a pandering move to sort of change things to sort of placate a certain sect of an audience. And look, hey, I think we're all, you know, understanding that, you know, 5 years ago, a Marvel movie would have won that for probably the last, like, 3 out of 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, Marvel's on a downswing right now, or at least this last year they very much are.
Well, anything from Disney, you know, too. I mean, we're not owned by Disney, so we can talk about them. I mean, Disney, anything that Disney produced was really horrible and sucked. I mean, we can segue to the Pat McAfee deal. You don't want to go there?
No. So, Blake, you know, as we let you go, and for those people that want to keep up with some of the things that you're doing on the review side, social media-wise, you know, where can people go?
You can always find me on Twitter, at Blake Stubbs, BlakeStubbs. I keep the same username across pretty much everything, so if you want to follow me on Letterboxd, I log a lot of the films I see, and I usually put a few comments on there. You can follow me on there as well. That's probably the easiest way.
The very best,
very easy to engage with.
You are. Yeah. You're the best in the business, Blockbuster Blake Stubb, and he could live anywhere. He could live in Hollywood, Monte Carlo. He could live anywhere. He lives in Peoria, Illinois, because he knows it is the entertainment capital of Illinois. Blake, thanks so much.
Hold on, I got a question for you, real quick. Hey, Blake, what was the lowest grossing Academy Award winning film ever? Can you name it? It was produced
the
in
Chicken with Linda.
No, well, that's probably it. But it's produced in 2008. It was a great movie. Can you name it?
I cannot.
Hurt Locker.
2008.
Oh, wow, the Hurt Locker.
And was a great movie.
Yeah.
And that was the lowest grossing ever.
All right. Well, we're learning something here.
The Hurt Locker is a movie that I saw in theaters and called it winning Best Pictures when I did.
Yeah.
And it did.
So you knew. You were the guy. All right. Thank you, Blake. Thanks so much for jumping on the show.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up. Dane here, 720 WGN.